This is the Chicago Way with John Cass and Jeff Carlin. But you know what? One guy who didn't even know about the Chicago Way was Pyrrhus of Epirus. Okay? It's a Greek city-state, and in about 300 BC, he had a battle with the Romans. And he won. And this is what Plutarch relates in a report. The army separated, it is said, after his victory, and Pyrrhus replied to one that it gave him great joy. For he had lost a great part of his forces he brought with him, and almost all his particular friends and principal commanders, and there were no others there to make recruits, and he found the Confederates in Italy backward. On the other hand, as from a fountain continually flowing out of the city, the Roman camp was quickly and plentifully filled up with fresh men, not at all abating in courage for the loss they sustained, but even from their very anger at gaining new force and resolution to go on with the war. Plutarch, The Life of Pyrrhus. You ever hear of a Pyrrhic victory? That's when a general burns down his whole army to win, and then at the end all his men are dead, or a lot of them are dead. All his forces are on the battlefield, crows flying all over the place, picking out eyes. You've got like old ladies running around, robbing the soldiers, you know, the bodies of the dead. You can just think of it like in a Game of Thrones or Lawrence of Arabia type of way. Okay, you got it in your head, right? Afghanistan, Belgium, it really doesn't matter. It's the same thing. Armies, dead, soldiers, treasure. And then I look at Illinois, land of Lincoln, where Bruce Rauner has just had his own Pyrrhic victory over Gene Ives, because he may have won the battle, but by trashing her continually, time and time again, in lie after lie on air that everyone bought and paid for about Gene Ives as the Madigan clone, I wonder if it helped him win. But in winning, is it going to help him win in November against J.B. Pritzker? To find out, we're going to talk, of course, to Jeff Carlin and to our good friend Tom Bevan of Real Clear Politics. And remember, it could have been a battlefield in Belgium. It could have been a battlefield in the Game of Thrones, on the plains of Sarma, wherever you want to have it. But it's all the Chicago Way.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man.
Castle.
There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand. Defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso. In a tower by the river. Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago Way.
Hello, Tom Bevan.
Mr. Cass, how are you?
Fine. We're talking about politics in Illinois after the, I'm looking at the Pyrrhic victory of Mr. Bruce Rauner, and I'm seeing all the Republican corpses on the battlefield and the Romans about to get funded by J.B. Pritzker. I'm just wondering what you think.
You know, Bruce Rauner is like one of those death row inmates who gets an extension from the governor. It was closer than most people thought, and the question is, you know, is there any way for him to repair his relations with the base of the party by November? Because he's going to need every single Republican to turn out. And I didn't get any sense, or haven't gotten any sense, that that's going to be something that they're going to be, that he and his team are going to be able to do. And you look at those vote totals from last night or from Tuesday night, and you know, Democrats garnered a whole lot more votes than Republicans did. I think Rauner's in big trouble heading into November.
The strategy seems to be, besides trashing Jeannie Ives as a Madigan, whatever the female version of Incubus is, Succubus or something, that was to depress turnout, right? They wanted a low turnout because they wanted to protect around her. And as a result, you see this thing where so many more, I don't know what the exact numbers are, but so many more Democrats came out in their contested primaries, and Republicans didn't have that kind of enthusiasm. I don't know. What does it portend for the fall?
I think Rauner's in trouble. I mean, I really do. It's in a midterm election. It's going to be, you know, it's a base election. Illinois is a blue state. So, you know, how is Bruce Rauner? Now, look, I guess the good news for Bruce Rauner is he's running against J.B. Pritzker, and there's always an opportunity that Pritzker could have, you know, more tapes come out or something on his taxes or something else that he could implode down the stretch, I suppose. But beyond that, I think he's going to be fighting an uphill battle with a lot. I mean, and look, the problem for Rauner is, you know, he has not leaned into Donald Trump at all. And so that's part of the problem. He's going to have to thread a needle. He can't, you know, he's got to keep his distance from Trump. And in doing that, he's going to not motivate any of the Republican-based voters who you know, like Trump and might turn out on his behalf. So, and if he's not able to repair his relations with the, you know, the conservatives who blocked Jeanne Ives over his, what they consider his betrayal on, you know, HB 40 and immigration and the like, look, it's just going to be a really, really tough race for him.
One thing, we're talking to Tom Bevin, the founder and publisher of Real Clear Politics and the Real Clear Politics Empire. And in case you guys don't go to the website, you should go immediately to that website, because you will find not only great opinion writing from all sides of the all perspectives, but also some pretty cool investigations and other stuff too. So, wear your hat as the as a national media observer, if you would. I've noticed that only at the end, I noticed the National Review kind of came out for Ives big time at the end, right when she needed it. The National Review, the conservative magazine founded by William F. Buckley, endorsed her and wrote glowingly about her and negatively about Trump. But I noticed something else, Tom. I didn't see Jeanne Ives have much of a presence on Fox News. Not at all. I mean, she may have been covered occasionally, you know, as part of a package. But I noticed Tucker Carlson doing a series of pieces on sanctuary cities and even Mayor Zorro, or as you call him, Rahm Emanuel, has that, you know, voter ID out with his picture, you know, that all Hispanics can carry in their wallets or next to their hearts. And I never saw Tucker or Ingram or any of the people do an Ives show.
Well, John, he did do a little bit of her ads, because she was the Democratic Governors Association keyed in and used Tucker's voice talking about Ives as the only conservative running.
Yes,
really.
I saw him. I heard him say Rauner's a fake Republican.
Right.
Which may or may not be true, and I assumed it to be true because Tucker said it. Okay. But be that as it may, I didn't see her having a big presence on the conservative television programs. Did you see that, Tom? Or am I putting you in a bad spot?
No. I think that's a good point. And, you know, part of that is, you know, the Fox, you know, there's a Fox Bureau in Chicago, and they're always, you know, pitching stories back to the headquarters in New York, back to Washington, D.C., to Special Report, to, you know, other places to try and, you know, and come up with a national angle. And some of those generate interest and some of them don't. I just think this race, you know, didn't generate as much national interest as you know, part of that is Jeanne Ives was sort of unknown for a while. And I think most of the pundits and talking heads, on the East Coast looked at this race and thought, oh, you know, she's never going to beat him. So why would we spend time covering that? It was probably more of that kind of mentality, that it wasn't really a race, when in fact, you know, she really did manage to catch fire, you know, at the end, and I think had momentum heading into Election Day, but still, you know, managed to come up whatever it was, you know, 20,000 votes short.
And Tom, do you think, I mean, all the reporting going into election night, it showed that she was polling really well and pretty much had Southern Illinois locked up because there's a more of a conservative anti-Rauner sentiment down there. Do you think he's going to have a chance to pull those people back in, or is he going to have to scrape and fight to try to win it in the collar counties around Chicago?
You know, I'll have to look at the general election results from 2014. Certainly in the primary 2014, you know, he did get, and that was in a more divided field. Obviously, there were four candidates, not just two. Rauner's folks were saying on Tuesday night that they felt like they had, you know, still had a decent ground operation downstate, and that, you know, he was well known for better or worse, and Jeannie Ives was unknown down there, and they felt fairly confident, because that was my question on election night, was that wasn't she going to, you know, gain ground as we got these votes coming in from downstate? And she did a little bit, but it turned out that he was able to generate enough votes down there to hang on. So I don't know. I mean, the question is, if you're a conservative, if you're a Republican downstate, and you are faced with the choice between Bruce Rauner and J.B. Pritzker, you know, are you motivated to go to the polls and pull the lever for him, or are you just going to stay home? I suspect it might be the latter. I think he's going to have to really turn out folks in the collar counties if he's going to have any shot at this. But, I think he's going to need all those votes downstate, and I'm just not sure he's going to be able to get them.
I just as you said that, I just pressed the button on a column, and now we do in the modern media age. We write the column the day it's on online the day before it's in print. And, yeah, it's a bleak November for Rauner, no question about it. What about the Democratic Party for a second? I mean, we know Rauner's faults, and he did the whole Ives of March thing and stabbed her and all that, pardon the pun, Pyrrhic victory. We did our Greek history lesson with all the dead bodies. But what about the one thing I find interesting, the way it's cast, two things. Gene Ives never got the stories written about her or on broadcast about a woman, you know, like how tough it is for a woman to face men in politics. You see that all the time from the producers that wear the fuzzy pink hats and the writers who wear those hats. I didn't see it here. So I guess maybe even though she has, what, four or five children, she might not be a woman, according to many journalists. And then the second thing is, the Democratic Party seems to be tacking even farther and farther to the left almost every day, nationally and locally. What do you make of that? And how is that characterized? As normal behavior? As evolving to a higher state of being? How does this? Because you end up paying for it, right? You end up paying for it, your taxes. So how do you see all that?
Yeah, look, I'm actually surprised JB won as handily as he did. It was a pretty early call. I suspect he's lucky he ran against two people and not just one, since the anti-Pritzker vote, if you want to call it that, was, you know, 51% combined. So he was probably lucky he was in a divided field. And look, he was able to he's the establishment guy, right? And he was able to fend off these challenges from the left. You look at Illinois 3, for example, though Marie Newman, you know, Dan Lipinski holds on there, and even though he was outspent, I mean, they poured money into that race. And that's not that, if you look at that, there's only one Democratic district in the state of Illinois that is more centrist than Lipinski's district. It's a D+6 district. This is not a, you know, Illinois 4 or 1 or 7, where it's a D+30 district. And the fact that Marie Newman came as close as she did to knocking him off, I think shows that there is a leftward march here this progressive Tea Party, whatever you want to call it, that we've seen in other places around the country, where you have sort of the left wing of the base, really energetic and enthusiastic and willing to, you know, ready and willing to take, you know, members out. I mean, even John, to the point where, you know, Jan Schakowsky and Luis Gutierrez are campaigning openly to try and, you know, execute one of their fellow congressmen from their delegation, where her statement last night where she came out, Marie Newman, and said, I'm not conceding because I want Lipinski to feel pain. I want him to be in pain for more of the night. I mean, kind of vicious stuff, I thought.
That's stuff that guys don't say. I don't want to get into the old battle of the sexes thing, but as we, you know, evolve as a people and become more, you know, wearing pink hats, and I have one at home, I shall put it on next time she's on the air so I can clearly understand her, because I think this sort of vindictiveness is rather, I don't know, it's not rather Walter Pigeon-ish.
Yeah, look, I mean, politics ain't beanbag, and some of these races get heated and stuff, but there was a sort of viciousness to the way she did that last night that, that I think speaks to the part of the schism within the Democratic Party. And this, again, the Tea Party, they hated the Republican establishment too and wanted to, you know, send them off to the guillotine. So I think you're seeing that in the Democratic Party now. But look, J.B. Pritzker, I think he's, as I said, obviously he's going to spend whatever he needs to spend to make sure that he's got, you know, an organization in place. He's got the air cover for it.
The number is he spent $124 per vote in the primary.
That's the big. So the big question is: so J.B. spent $70 million. I think if you add up everything that was spent by Kennedy and Biss and Rauner and Ives, it was $120 million just for the primary. And now we've got these two billionaires heading toward November. I think the record is the California governor's race, where it was $220 million or something like that. The question is whether we're going to break that record or not, and that Illinois will be the most expensive governor's race ever in the history of the United States.
Given the dynamics and what happened in these numbers, you should take a look, and I asked Tom, who will take a look, but also everyone listening, keep an eye on how much money Ken Griffin gives to Bruce Rauner now that he looks like, you know, the wheels are off the bus. Because Bruce Rauner's going to have to pay for this himself, I think. He'll have to pay for a lot of this himself. This is not going to be – national conservative groups aren't going to be – a Club for Growth is not going to be coming in on this deal, right? So you're going to see him have – you want to be governor? Pay for it. And the other guy? Pay for it. And then we're almost Roman, Tom. Right?
But John,
this is very Roman of us to have our equestrians. Right.
So here's the question I want to ask you. So this, you know, I was talking to someone about this earlier, and the deal was, if the election is about Mike Madigan, Rauner has a chance to win. If it's about anything else, if it's about Trump, if it's about Rauner himself, if it's about anything other than Mike Madigan, Rauner's going to lose. Do you think, A, do you buy that, and then do you think that this election will be about Mike Madigan in some way, because JB can be portrayed as legitimately a Madigan ally? You know, Rauner said the other day at this press conference, he used Madigan's name 31 times or something in minutes. Is that strategy going to fly? Is it going to work?
I'm going to jump on this one, Tom, because I've been mulling this over since I heard JB endorse legalizing weed. I think that's going to be his hinge, and he's going to invigorate people to jump on that. And if he can convince farmers it can be a cash crop, or that there's something in it for them, that would give him a reason to betray, if you will, a Rauner.
I don't know. I think in terms of the weed, that's going to be grown in warehouses on the west side of Chicago by guys who are living in Oak Brook. Okay, capiche? But on this deal. And it's all hydroponic, okay? On this deal, though, what you mentioned, I think, you know, clearly Pritzker is trying to hang Trump as an albatross around Rauner's neck. Trump can't.
Correct.
Rauner can't stand Trump. He doesn't even want to mention him. He hasn't mentioned him. He's stayed far away from him. There's no real connection there. But there is a definite connection between Mr. Belvedere and Mike Madigan. And Mr. Belvedere ends up paying. Well, his deal is this. Mike Madigan let them all know, you want to run for governor, you better bring a lot of money because you're going to have to pay for the statehouse races, right? So that's what J.B. Pritzker's doing. He's not only paying for his own campaign when he spends this money. This is about statehouse races. This was about Congress. And now he's going to fund the Illinois Democratic Party, but he won't be in control of it. On the other side, Rauner is in control of it. He is the de facto chairman of the Republican Party that he bought. So there's no party chairman to put Rauner on a, you know, like a narrow path to say, hey, maybe your operatives don't want to go on TV and trash conservatives at this moment of victory. No, you know, Madigan would be on the phone to his guys, talking to their guys, saying, shut up. I don't want to hear that. But this, but Rauner can't, because he's his own client. What do they say when a lawyer is his own client? What do they say? You know, a lawyer who is himself as his client might be a difficult prospect, I think.
Well, so you think it'll work or not?
I think that Madigan is definitely the issue. He's been the issue before Rauner even thought about running for governor, when I was writing about it, and you and I were talking about it on Milt Rosenberg's show long before all these so-called crackerjack political reporters figured out that Mike was the boss. But after that, now that Rauner has basically lied about Jean Ives and saying she's Madigan's child or whatever, his sister, and I think he undercut his moral position. And without a firm moral ground, you can't make a transactional personality in politics, can't make the argument against a cynical, you know, transactional politician like Mike Madigan. I think it undercuts the theme. People won't trust him. And the conservatives that turned out yesterday or the other day in Illinois, not all of them will come back, Tom. They won't come back.
No.
A lot of them will have already moved to Tennessee, Indiana. Actually, didn't you say you had a real estate agent for me that could find a little tiny house in Indiana someplace for me?
Just across the border.
Tom Bevin, Real Clear Politics, and my friend and Jeff Carlin's friend, thanks for spending some time with us on the Chicago Way.
You bet, guys.
Thanks, Tom.
Thanks, Tom.
Now listen up, people party, they say parties are fun.
What kind of party?
Like the Democrats or Republicans.
Now listen here, people party, they say party means dance.
What kind of dance?
You gotta get in your political stance.
Now listen up, people party, they say parties are fun.
What kind of party?
There are many parties.
You know, Jeff Carlin, you know, I really wanted to ask him about how it was hanging out with Lynn Sweet and all my friends at the Sun Times.
That was kind of cool. I like to say, it pleased me to see him in on that.
So, what did you think of the election?
You know,
because you were, you know, producing the Ro Khanna and Devolana show.
Yeah, you know, I knew Rauner's people were nervous, very nervous.
You mean you saw Pat Brady freaking out?
Well, you know,
because I saw him freaking out too.
Yeah, he did too. But you know, but Pat, I mean, I had been asking for a while, you know, for weeks and months, really, to get Rauner on and see if he would do something.
Me too.
And he'd kind of, you know, they'd hummed and hawed and they'd. Just didn't happen, but then Monday they were eager.
We want to be on,
yeah. Right? You know, the day before they were very eager.
Is that after he skipped the debates with Brave Sir Robin and Jeannie Ives, right?
Right. Yeah. And so it was interesting because then it made me really feel that Ives had a shot at it.
She had a very good shot,
right? And she was they were seeing bad things, and we were seeing a lot of the early voting. In places like McHenry County, you know, there was a spike in numbers.
She didn't win, but it's over for him because the fact that if you don't win 60 nationally, it was you better get 60% of the vote or people won't think anything of you nationally. The fact that he just barely squeaked by after all those negative ads, ripping his own party, and now his henchmen are all over Twitter on me and like, what am I, like, not a legitimate conservative? Right. I guess, you know, I must be a Madigan guy too.
Something
that's, you know, how they're doing it, and they're going after Proft.
Yeah,
and I understand that. I'm not part of Proft's deal, so
right? Yeah,
they're doing their thing, but you know, Jeff Carlin. Plus, there's more than. I try to do a radio thing where you raise your voice. There's more than just Rauner. Don't you feel sorry for Joe Berrios?
Yeah, that's the, talk about the Chicago way.
Oh.
And for those who may not be keyed in on this, the story goes is that Andre Arreola was running as part of a three candidate race against Joe Berrios to dethrone him, if you will.
Right.
And there was some question called months before the
Kagi's
election.
These people didn't want her in the ballot.
Right. And so they
tried to get her.
They
off.
They challenged the
progressives.
Right.
These so-called good progressives that care about good government.
So they challenged her signatures.
Right.
One judge finds that there is enough to disqualify her from being a ballot. Ballots are already printed. Ballots are already out. Instructions are already laid out. So
don't let her vote.
Right. So
and then,
so the Cook County puts out this notice, this email, this mass email, and we're talking weeks before the election all the electioneer judges. Say, hey, you got to hand out this flyer. Make sure people are aware that if they vote for Andre Arreola, it's a wasted vote. She's not an illegitimate candidate. Unfortunately, it won't count. Just make sure we do this. So that was their training, and inadvertently, somebody in that. Who did put that training out, and we're talking weeks before the election, they also scheduled a text message to go out to all the Chicago election judges the morning of the election, and then they forgot about it. So the story goes, which is that we'll get to the Chicago Way piece of that. But then an appellate judge, Andrea Rila, appeals. A judge overturns the previous ruling, says she's a viable candidate.
She should be on the ballot.
She should be on the ballot.
Vote for her if you like.
So then the Chicago Board of Elections has to put out another teaching moment in an email and a text message and a phone call and a letter saying to all the election judges, ignore what we told you before. She's a candidate. Do not put up anything that says she's not a candidate. Put up these things that say she is a viable candidate, that she's on the ballot for a reason. She's there.
Some of these judges have like 15 cats and and one landline, and they're like 80 years old.
Exactly. Exactly. So the morning of the election, this text message that was previously scheduled goes out, superseding the emails that came out the night before explaining one more time that she should be. So now there's all this confusion. So election judges were handing out flyers and instructing potential voters then if they're a vote for Andre Arreola is a wasted vote, it will not count.
What
which
wards,
was wrong.
Here's the thing I don't know.
Yes. This is the Chicago
where it wasn't. I guarantee. I bet you it didn't happen in the 13th Ward.
No.
Right? Where there's a committeeman who want. Where did it happen?
Well,
it happened in the progressive wards where they don't do the machine stuff. Right.
Yeah, it's true.
You know what's interesting? Yeah. I heard initial reports on this.
Yeah.
On the radio, initial reports, and I was like, okay, I'm listening to it, driving around doing my own reporting and thinking, okay, these guys are just going to buy the line, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're just going to buy whatever they say and they're going to play, in other words, I thought, okay, reporters are going to just say if Madigan, it might be a Madigan thing, but then it really doesn't help Madigan.
Right.
And two reporters started asking the question on the air, saying, "Well, wait a minute, that wouldn't Rayla on the ballot wouldn't help
Berrios, machine Berrios.
It would help Berrios." Her off the ballot would help
Kagi. Right, exactly, right.
So reducing the Rayla vote would help Kagi. You know who those two guys were? John Williams, WGN, and Steve Bertrand.
Right.
And I thought, I'm not going to go up because John stuck his head in here earlier while we were taping.
Yeah.
Like, oh, what? Could I use this room? And I looked at him, but I'm not going to go up and kiss his hand. But I will tell you, I got to give those two guys props for having the brains and critical thinking to actually do that on the fly.
Right.
So John Williams and Bertrand, heard you the other day. You did a good job.
Hat tip to that. Yeah, and it's really interesting. And now we don't know. I mean, as we tape this the day after the election,
give her a new one and open it up to everybody. Let's have a redo of the assessor's race with Berrios, Kagi, and her. Let them run again. It's the only fair thing to do.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, absolutely. You got to believe it's fair. But then again, who benefits from it? I think ultimately, Berrios.
Then Joe Berrios wins, and then we're going to have Kagi file a lawsuit.
That's a constitutional crisis.
Who is this Kagi guy anyway?
I don't know.
Just because he's not Joe Berrios, everyone loves this guy? He's a rich guy? What? At least Rayla, she actually did this work.
Right.
She's the one person besides Berrios. I don't think Kagi's like a
I don't know anything about
guy.
Him.
He's a hedge guy.
Yeah.
Fun guy. He saw an opening. He wanted to buy an office. But she knows what she's doing.
Yeah, it's the
let her run.
It's the Chicago. Well, yeah,
come on. Liars, cheaters, proof, and all that stuff we said when we were kids. Right. Let her run.
I know.
What about Dan Burke?
Dan Burke. Well, how the hierarchy is crumbling.
Danny Burke, brother of Ed Burke, Alderman 14th Ward, is no longer going to be the state rep there, which is amazing. As that falters, Chuy Garcia, boss Chuy, from the southwest side, Chapatista that he is and left wing that he is. I still like the guy.
He's a nice guy, very nice guy.
He's building a machine.
He really
is. He gets upset when you say, your machine did well, because you took out the broom and sweep, four victories, or you won four races.
Yeah, he's got political chops. There's no doubt about it. He forced Rahm into a runoff. He's made himself.
John Kess helped, and then John Kess got fired from the other radio station.
Right. And he's done a good deal to keep a name for himself in national politics, supporting Bernie.
Bro.
Yeah, so it's interesting. I am amazed at the things we've seen this election round.
I think Dan
Lipinski squeaking out Marie Newman. I mean, we talked about it briefly with Tom Bevin, but that's an interesting one too. I'm amazed at her tenacity to say that now that she was coming out saying, "Oh, well, this is a wake up call to you, Dan. You're not representing the people the right way. You're not representing the people the right way."
But she is.
But she is. But that.
But you look. That's the. What I didn't like is when she lost, it was a tough race.
Yeah.
You lose. Be like Jeannie Ives. Be gracious. Or
absolutely.
Chris Kennedy. This is not partisan. Chris Kennedy was extremely gracious in his life.
You know who was also I was listening.
She wasn't. Newman was like, I'm going to make you suffer.
Yeah, you feel the
pain.
Like,
really?
Yeah.
Really? You know what? That explains you to me, madam.
Mm-hmm.
That explains everything to me.
I know. And even in her concession, she said that, Dan, this is for you. You need to pay attention. You're not doing it the right way. But you know who I thought the concession speech with J.B. Pritzker, he did the thanked everybody who ran for pushing it.
Mm-hmm.
And Amaya Pilar, who a guest on our show, he made special note to point out Amaya. And Amaya was one of those candidates who, no backing, no machine benefit. I mean, the guy was funding it on a hope and prayer.
And hope and prayer that JB would help him.
Yeah. I mean, I know we talked about it, that how it seemed more like he was pining for maybe a lieutenant governorship or to be picked up by somebody. But I respected Pritzker enough to do that and make special point to put that out there.
I thought he was really good, especially when he said, I'm not going to put on a leather vest and jump on a Harley.
Yeah.
And I also thought that he was so upbeat. It was like he was talking, like he was a preacher.
Yeah.
Talking to his own choir, okay? And everyone loves him and the Holy Spirit and all that. And then I started thinking, he has, how much money did he give to the black churches?
Yeah.
I bet you is he not an honorary bishop by now?
Oh, for sure.
What? Some sort of theologian? Like, he could wear robes and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Give a speech. Jeff, we talked about these political races and all that and the devastating losses that some of them feel. But then we didn't get into our own personal lives. And there was a one loss that it's overshadowed by all this other political nonsense. Our beloved Blackhawks are eliminated from the playoffs.
Yeah, it's been a tough week, a tough month. I also lost my dog.
No.
Yeah.
When did this happen? You had the. We didn't even get into your aunt's beagle's cat attack.
I know. So my parents spent a few weeks in Florida, and I was watching the dog. The dog was my dog, but when I moved out, I never lived anywhere I could have a dog. So the dog stayed home. And while my parents were in Florida, Christine and I took the dog, and we watched her.
This is your boyhood dog.
Yeah, I am.
Or a young adult.
Yeah, young adult. I mean, I think I was like 18 when we got her, 19 maybe, right. And in college. So her name is Carly, sweetest black lab on the planet. I mean, we rescued her, and I think she came from like Eastern or Southern Illinois. The university is like, she was like a frat puppy, and no one really trained her. It took her a month to learn fetch, and she was like, I was trained fine, but like catch and fetch, she didn't know any of those things. You know, we take her to the dog park. She was always a dog that everyone kind of stayed away from the other dogs because she was weird. You know, she was just an oddball, but she was the sweetest creature on the planet. Never attacked anything, was always happy to be everywhere, and just so sweet. And she loved me to death, and it was... so she went home. My parents got home. We took her back, and she just died.
Was she like in poor health?
No, her health is really good. She spent the last month with us. She was taken for walks, and we played ball, and we wrestled a little bit. I mean, she was 16 years old, but she was fit. I mean, she was healthy. Yeah. But we don't know. I mean, there was something happened, and she was showing signs of vestibular disease or syndrome, rather, which the doctor said could have been anything. You know, it could have been anything from a tumor to an ear infection. But it would have been, you know, she's 16. You know, how much can we put her through to try to figure out something like that?
Quality of life,
exactly. Dog, right? And so my mom made the tough choice to put her down, and it was very sad. And this came the 2 days after my aunt's dog attacked one of the cats. The cat's fine now, but he went through severe shock, and it was just awful.
Jeff calls and says, we can't do the podcast that day or something because I have a dog-cat issue. I'm like, what? And he goes, my aunt's dog attacked the cat and started the other dogs to attack.
Yeah, a new dog. My aunt got this little beagle mix, and you know, my aunt has these other two dogs.
Beelzebub, huh?
Yeah.
Right.
And his other two dogs just jumped in as soon as the pheromones were flying, and it just became, you know, just terrible. And so he was, you know, no severe injuries, nothing lacerated that we know of, but he went into shock, and he was in rough shape. So Christina and I rushed him to the hospital. They kept him overnight. And
how much did it cost you?
A lot.
More than a Blackhawk ticket?
Yeah, more than a Blackhawk ticket, more than my first car. Well, it was a used car, so
still,
yeah. But he's okay, and he's staying with Christy and I, and he's in good shape, and
the cat
playing with the other cat, so he's good. He turned out all right. So it's been on top of that with the Blackhawks. It's just been
what happened to the Blackhawks?
Wow, they're getting old. That's really it. The key players are getting old.
When they were great and the most dominant team in many years in the National Hockey League. They had not only great talent, but they also had great talent among their diggers, the guys who actually dug the puck out.
Gamers, yeah.
Gamers, your host, right? Types. Gamers, you know? And those guys become expensive, too.
Yep.
And more of them get old, and then they move on. And pretty soon all you have left is Toews and Kaner.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, and the other guys are, and you think, but I think Blackhawk fans realized what they had and loved it. I don't think they're like covetous,
no,
and hateful.
Not
about
at all.
It, right?
They had 10 years of
greatness.
Of top caliber team, a team that was one of the best in the league. And now, yeah, they'll regroup. And
now it's time for Rocky Warts to rebuild the team. And yeah. I don't think they'll have. I do think they'll do it.
It's a great organization, and it'll be. You know, they'll have to figure out their money issue with some of these stars that have all big contracts. But
they want money. They'll get rid of the stars, buy kids cheap, and build it.
That's the hope. But right? If those contracts are well written, I'm sure.
Well, anyway, I just wanted to say that's more. There's more in life, right, than just politics. Mm-hmm. The dog dies. The rainbow bridge for your dog.
Yeah.
Think about that. And all of you out there. You know, we fight about politics, but you know what? Politics. Remember what my grandfather said. Aftos milai, ke o gaidros klani. That politician speaks and the donkeys break wind. But we don't do that on this show. For Jeff Carlin, WGN Radio, Tom Bevan of Real Clear Politics, and me, John Cass, your mild-mannered columnist for a great metropolitan newspaper. This has been The Chicago Way.